We're going to talk about envy today, and in this kind of theme I've been doing this summer on emotions. Next Sunday, we're going to be a little more positive. We're going to talk about the emotions of joy and how joy is different than happiness. And we're going to explain the difference, and there's a lot of folks out there striving to be happy. The world environment targets and markets and advertises things to make us happy, whether it's material things we buy or restaurants we eat at or whatever it's going to be. And there's a big difference between the internal joy and external happiness. And so we're going to be here. And I chose to do something more positive because next Sunday is my wife and I's wedding anniversary, and I couldn't find myself doing something more negative. So I need to do something with joy, okay? And so I should be good there. And then we get going for the rest of the month of, I can't believe it's already August coming up. And but it is. So yeah, Labor Day is right around the corner. You know, Christmas is coming. By the way, Hallmark Channel, have you all noticed they had Christmas movies on in July? That's just offensive, you know. Although I do like the Hallmark, I do. Last year, we watched every Hallmark movie, and I told you they all started out the same way. Two lost souls find each other, they shouldn't be together, and then they get in a big spat, and then they come back together, and they always end with a kiss. And so that's every Hallmark movie in the world has that. That's all you have to do. That's a script. Change the words, change the characters. It all is the same thing. So, but I like them. Of course, I like Sleepless in Seattle, too, so who do I know? So, envy. I want to start off by telling you a little story, and then I'm going to get into the actual outline that we have in PowerPoint for you. You know, envy and jealousy, they kind of tie together. It's been called the green-eyed monster. It's been called green with envy. I don't know if you know where that comes from. It comes from William Shakespeare that actually coined that phrase, talking about the fact that when somebody is envious to the point it makes them physically sick and they can take on the color of jaundice, which is yellow and green, and that's where it came from, is that as it eats away in you, it does a lot to your physical nature and your physicality, if that's a word. And so that's where we get that from, is green with envy, or the green-eyed monster. When I first got married back in 1976, I was in the military, and previously, I got to understand, I was raised in a preacher's home, a pastor's home. I was a rebellious son out of three boys, quit school at 17, my dad signed me into the Navy a week after I turned 17, and I went off to the military, and I didn't want anything to do with church, with God, or anything else. It was all turned off. We had moved around. I've seen hypocrites in church. I kind of got fed up with things, and I watched my parents go through struggles, and I said, I want to know part in that. So I took off of the service, and I remember that my parents used to send people out, you know, other preachers to go visit me when I was in Port Norfolk to talk to me about the Lord, and they can never get on the ship because if they try to get on the ship, we'd shoot them. And so that was kind of nice not to be able to put up with that. My brother was in a singing group traveling with college, and they came to sing at Central Baptist Church in Portsmouth, Virginia. And they got a hold of me and said, hey, we want you to spend the day with us and the night with us, because I haven't seen my brother in a year. He's in college in Missouri, and here I am in Norfolk, Virginia. So they picked me up. Turned out he was staying with the preacher's home, and my dad kept trying to get to come witness to me. And long story short, we made the connection and stuff, and this couple, George and Vicki Peters, became close friends. I came home from my brother's wedding. I wasn't permitted to be home. We got back from Cuba. We got to Fort Lauderdale. I took off on a plane to go to my brother's wedding without authorization from the Navy. They really didn't like you doing that, I found out. But I got there for the wedding, and then my brother got married on Saturday. I didn't make the wedding because I went to the house to change clothes where my parents live, and they had moved, didn't tell me. You ever hear that story? You go home, and they've moved. What happened to me? So I had to find out where my parents were living. Finally made it to reception, and then the next night, I was at, my father was pastoring at the church I pastored. I followed him for 10 years, and I got saved that night, became a Christian, and I had to kind of change the whole world upside down. I met a young lady, we fell in love, and a few months later, we got married. Now, here's where the envious part comes from. This couple, George and Vicki Peters, said, when you move back to Norfolk, don't buy any furniture, because the folks in the church at Central Baptist have collected furniture for you guys. And but me, is I wanted to have what Mom and Dad had, even though they had worked 30, 40 years for what they had, I wanted what they had. So I remember getting to Norfolk and ignoring these friends that wanted to give me furniture. I went out shopping to Grant Furniture in Norfolk, Virginia, and I bought furniture, whole household furniture, for $1,800 at 28% interest. How many remember 28% interest, okay? Okay. And we got that, and because I wanted everything new, I wanted to have the status, I wanted to have what the, I wanted to be fitting in, and I was envious of other folks, jealous of what they had, and I remember that within 6 months, every piece of that furniture fell apart because the inside of it were made with cardboard, not wood. So I learned a great lesson, and I paid for that furniture for 5 years at 28% interest, even though I only had it for 6 or 7 months because it all fell apart. I learned a great lesson about jealousy and envious, and it humbled me greatly. It's not that I've gone through life without being envious of other people, don't get me wrong, but I always come back to that when I think to myself that I probably would have been better to take the good quality furniture that the folks at church were offering, because it probably would have lasted a lot longer. But I remember I had to have what somebody else had, and I wasn't happy until I got it. And envy and jealousy can make us make bad decisions and bad financial decisions. And we're going to talk a little bit about that in a few minutes here. Let me give you the definition. It'll be on the screen here of envy. A feeling of discontent, resentful longing aroused by someone else's possessions, qualities, or luck. And I would add in there, that's the actual definition for dictionary. I would add in there luck or blessings. Envy is that feeling of discontent, that inside feeling of resentment towards somebody who has seemingly got stuff better than you have, seemingly has progressed further than you have. And it may be position in life, it may be work-related, it may be this. And I've seen it on both sides because, to me, it's always relative sometimes to your age. You know, when you're young, you're comparing yourself with other young people. The older you get, and when you get in your 30s and your 40s and 50s and now 60s, you begin to see where everybody else is in life. And if people begin to compare, and it can make you jealous and very envious of what other people have. And these are emotions that we've already talked about, anger and all the other ones and loneliness, but this is an emotion that really can cripple you. Because it will make you dissatisfied with your life, and it will ruin relationships with other people. It will make you always comparing with what somebody else has. And so it is something we have to watch out for. And I've seen what it does to people that are envious. I've seen the things they buy trying to match up. And to me, it is an emotion that is highly damaging. In fact, there's so many biblical stories, and we're going to talk about one today, kind of maybe surprise you, but there's so many biblical stories about characters in the Bible that were envious of somebody else, King Saul or King David, you name it, Joseph and Joseph's brothers, tremendous amount of envious and jealousies. Let me go over real quick here a list of things that we find are common that we envy. Number one, the obvious one, is money. Is we envy money. We are jealous when somebody has and we don't have, and it can make bad financial decisions in your life. Second, possessions. You know, when somebody drives that new car home, there's always that little jealousy there about what they have. Somebody has something new in their home. You know, it's possessions, toys, whatever it may be. Kids go through this, by the way. Kids get jealous, especially around Christmas time, when they see what other their friends have gotten, whether it be clothes, possessions, toys, or whatever. But possessions can make us very, very jealous. Position. We can be jealous and envious of somebody's position. If somebody has got advancements in their job, other folks can be very jealous of that. Folks seem to get the recognition for things that other folks should, you know, they may feel envious of that position or recognition. Relationships. We get jealous of relationships. When you're in high school, everybody wants to hang out with that certain group, and they can be envying of the fact that you fit into this group and you don't fit into this group, but it can be that even in adulthood. Popularity. We get envious or jealous of popularity when somebody seems to be the name person or whatever. I want to tell you, you can be a public figure, you can have popularity, but one day someone's going to forget who you are, and it's okay. Opportunities. We think that some folks got more opportunities than somebody else. I listened to a speech one time. I'm trying to think who it was. I think it was the actor that played on the 70s show, Ashton. And he gave a speech. I think he was talking about the fact that success looks a lot like hard work. And I love the speech he gave, but he talked about opportunities and how that opportunity sometimes are made yourself. And then people many times get envious of praise when somebody else gets acknowledged over somebody else. And the character in the Bible that really talks about that is King Saul and King David, because the scripture even says that when they went off to battle, that the people were praising King Saul and King David, but they praised David for his 10,000s of successes, where they praised Saul for his thousands of successes. And of course, envy and jealousy. Study the life of Saul. It is a tremendous story of the spiral effect of being jealous and having envy in your life. And so those are the things that we find ourselves being envious of. Let me give you, before I get into some scripture, I'm just going to lay this out. What envy robs us of? It robs us of contentment. It robs us of peace. It robs us of satisfaction. It robs us of harmony in relationships. And it robs us of self-worth. And that list, as you see on the screen there, is pretty broad, but at the same time, it does. When you're jealous of somebody, you're envious of somebody, it can really make you discontent. It can make you miserable. That's why they call it green with envy. It can take your peace away and your solitude and your contentment. It can take away satisfaction and the joy that you have in things that you do. It also can ruin relationships. When envy involves in a couple that involves financial, and one is envious of what other people have, begins to spend the money where they're not in agreement, it can bring all kinds of tragedies when it comes to your incomes and your money. I'm fortunate that Dawn and I both have the same philosophy on money. We really don't look at things. I mean, I was raised, I never knew what it was to want. I had parents in that middle class thing. And I remember went through a little bit of that envious where I wanted everything first class. And I couldn't find myself ever using a coupon for anything. That's embarrassing to use a coupon. Now I can't wait till I get the Kohl's flyer and I take that sticker off, and you've all done it, and you're wondering, are you the loser who gets 10, or are you the person that gets 30? And all of a sudden, I take it off the last time, and I found 30%. And then I had Kohl's cash, which is money that they're giving you because you spent more money to get you back in the store to spend more money. Not a bad concept. And then you get in there, and all of a sudden you look at the receipt, and it says that you have saved $210 and you only paid $53. And then the best one, it says senior discount, 10%. I was at Dunkin' Donuts by my house on Raffia Road the other day, and I've been going to get these iced coffees and break the day up. And I got the receipt, and I said, "Oh, senior discount." She goes, "Yeah, I know. I probably should not have given it to you because you're not a senior yet." And I said, "How old do you think I am?" She's my new best friend, by the way. She said, probably about 45, 46. Seriously, I paid for the discount with the tip. When I said, no, I'm 60. And she goes, okay, all right. So, but I got my senior discount there. By the way, she is my best friend. Go in there and tip her anytime you want, okay? But in all reality, it is envious and materialism. And I remember, I wanted everything first class. I wanted everything name brand. And now I'm thrilled when my wife comes home from Costco's and has got cargo pants shorts she bought for me for $8. They're pants. They're no different than anything else. And then other folks go, yeah, I paid $47 for these shorts. Why? Costco, yeah. Don't tell my wife I said anything about Costco, because she knows I never want to go to that store with her. But I got to say, not bad. So, but I remember being envious. And younger you are, a lot of times you are. I'm going to talk about advertising in a second here. But to me, it is a big push today, that comparison. Got to have everything the same. Got to have everything like everybody else. Well, what does the Bible say about envy? We're going to read three short passages, then I'm going to get to the fourth one and kind of lock in there about the story. Maybe a weird story to you that you may not see the envy. I'm making up this own word. Just go with me. It's envy, okay? But envious, is that a word? Envious? I need Sarah here to correct my English. So, but Proverbs 14:30 says this: a heart at peace gives life to the body, but envy rots the bones. And in Proverbs, by the way, there are a lot of passages talking about jealousy and envy. But that last phrase there, but envy rots the bone, is I want to kind of look at that for a second. It's a process. It is not an immediate effect. You ever see rust on a car? I mean, I was raised in Detroit, and back when cars were made out of all metal, and they weren't really protected. And Detroit, when it snowed, they salted everything. And you knew if you saw a car without rust, it was probably a guest in the state. It was a tourist. But usually, by the time you see the rust coming on the vehicle and bubbling up, it has been processing for that where you could not see it. The corruption and the corrosion was there, but it was not plain to sight until it got to the point where it had deteriorated and ruined that part of the metal. In fact, by the time you see rust on a vehicle, there's nothing you can do but replace that panel or that area. I mean, I remember Bondo, which was fiberglass and everybody used it and stuff. It wasn't the same. But here's what I'm trying to look at this verse here. It says, but envy rots the bones. Is what I'm trying to say is that by the time the envy has got to the place to where it has created detriment to you, physically and spiritually and emotionally, it has been working for a long time. And by the time it gets there, it is very difficult to remove. So when the author of Proverbs, King Solomon, writes, says, I thought to myself, but envy rots the bones, which means you don't know you have it until it comes to the surface, like a cancer. When you finally detect some cancers, it's because it's gone too far. So keep that in mind. The next verse, Ecclesiastes, written by the same author. Proverbs is written by Solomon in his days of ruling, and it's a book of wisdom. Ecclesiastes is written by Solomon when he's older, and he's beginning to look back at all the foolish things he thought, said, and did back in the old days. And now he's an older individual, and he's beginning to reflect upon the vanity of life and all, because he spent most of his life trying to be the richest man in the world, which he succeeded. And now he's looking at this and says, what is it worth? In fact, he even says here, I'm going to leave it to my kids who aren't really thankful for it anyways. And so he has this, you know, when you get older, you begin to reflect back and you look at all the things you thought were vitally important, all the statuses you want, all the things you want, and you look back and you think to yourself, what was my priority should have been in the first place? Obviously, God first, family second. And so to me, it's a very enlightening book, and reading these two books together is very enlightening. But this is what he says here in Ecclesiastes 4:4. And I saw that all toil and all achievement springs up from one person's envy of another. This too is meaningless, a chasing after the wind. And he actually points that out, that in his younger days, and if you're young here, I encourage you to listen to this. In his younger days, that many think decisions were made in younger people's lives based upon the fact of envy and of achieving what somebody else has, or owning what they have, or participating in what they have. And what he says here, this is all meaningless. A chasing after the wind. And the older you get, the more you realize all the things you have really didn't mean a whole lot. It comes down to the people in your life, your love, your God, but your family, your kids, your grandkids, the joy of those things there. But a very enlightening verse, Ecclesiastes 4:4. The next one is in the New Testament, Titus chapter 3, verse 3. It says this, at one time we too were foolish, disobedient, deceived, and enslaved by all kinds of passions and pleasures. We lived in malice and envy, because being hated and hating one another. And what I want you to get from that is simply this, is that these emotions, these passions, and the word passion there actually could be another word for emotions, will bring out malice, which means is malicious intent, hatred for other people, being hated. When somebody is envious, and they're always complaining about what they don't have, people want to avoid that person. A very clear picture of what happens when you're envious and you're jealous of what everybody else has is you're going to find relationships hurt, you become very malice, it becomes a very hurtful situation. Those are some verses, and I always encourage folks that, you know, take a walk through the scriptures or Google scriptures on envy, and you'd be surprised how many they are, envy and jealousy. Now, the one I want to park at for a few minutes here is a story, and it's a story about Jesus and his disciples. And it's found in Matthew chapter number 20, verse 20 through 28, and I'm going to get to it in a second, but I want to set it up. Jesus had chosen 12 disciples. And as we know, we have some of those that have tag names. One of the tag names is the Doubting Thomas. We know Judas Iscariot was the betrayer. We know that Peter was the most rambunctious one, but you had James and John. In fact, John was known as the one who loved deeply. He was a very emotional man. He was very in touch with his emotional side. And when they first came on board as part of Jesus' team, it was James first, and he brought his brother John involved in that. They were called the Sons of Zebedee, which was a well-known fisherman on the Sea of Galilee. And they began to follow Jesus from place to place and ministering. And each one of these disciples, we sometimes overly promote them to something more than human. I know sometimes they're given sainthood in the Catholic Church, which is fine. I'm glad we acknowledge those that are great heroes of the faith. But they were common everyday men with everyday thoughts, everyday frailties, everyday emotions. They bickered, they fought, they questioned. Peter was known to argue with Jesus. He was always the one to argue with Jesus over things. And their families were all associated. They all knew each other. And we don't find much about all the other parents, such as Thomas. We don't know anything about his parents. We don't know anything about Judas's parents and how he was raised and what. But we do know about James and John. James and John were the sons of Zebedee, which was a well businessman. But we don't know a whole lot about the rest of the family. But then his mother pops into the picture. And which tells me, from what we're going to read here, is that she had been involved watching and, you know, trying to position her children, because she recognized who Jesus was, the King of Kings, the Lord of Lords, the Messiah, all that there. And she comes up and makes a request to Jesus about her two sons. Now, I want to start with that. There's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with that. But she was trying to leverage them to be in a positional situation when Jesus reached his kingdom. Whether it was set up the kingdom in Jerusalem at that point in time, which some were anticipating, or whether it was a heavenly kingdom. But she begins to talk to Jesus about her two sons, where she thinks they ought to be in the ruling committee when he finally sets up his kingdom. And what it does to the other 10 is quite interesting. So I wanted to give you that setup as you read it. Look what it says here in Matthew chapter 20, verse 20 through 28. Then the mother of Zebedee's sons, which is James and John, came to Jesus with her sons, and kneeling down, asked a favor of him. "What is it you want?" he asked, and she said, "Grant that one of these two sons of mine may sit at your right and the other at your left in your kingdom." Now, once again, I believe she was referring that he was going to go to Jerusalem and that he was going to cast out the Roman Empire and set up his kingdom on the throne of David. So I'm thinking she's thinking the immediate, but obviously there's the eternal realm too. Says, "You don't know what you're asking," Jesus said to them. "Can you drink the cup that I am going to drink?" "We can," they answered. And Jesus said to them, "We will indeed drink from the cup, but to sit at the right or the left is not for me to grant. These places belong to those in whom they have been prepared by my Father." When the 10 heard about this, they were indignant with the two brothers. Jesus called to them and said, "You know that the rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their high officials exercise authority over them. Not so with you. Instead, whoever wants to become the great among you must be the servant. Whoever wants to become first must be the slave. Jesus, just as the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life for a ransom." Now, I want to point out some things here. Is the 10. And obviously, it starts off with the mother being somewhat envious a position. And she comes with her sons. And she makes this request to Jesus. And of course, Jesus' answer, it's not part of our story today in a sense, but his answer is that basically, if you want to be first, you got to be last. If you want to be a master, you got to first be a servant. And what he's saying, basically, stop trying to worry about position. Just serve and let the Father choose who he advances or whatever. And I think it's a very good way of living. But then the story hits on the fact that the 10 were indignant with the two brothers. Now, I want to remind you, they didn't say anything. The mother said something. But the 10 were obviously angry and indignant and maybe even a little envious and jealous that this request was being made. I'm sure Peter's thinking, "Why did I make this request? I wish I had a parent around here to do this." But here's the thing I want you to get, is that they were involved in this whole episode. Because when Jesus says to them and talks to them, it's interesting what he says. Because he says here, what does you want? And she says, I want you to grant my sons to be at the right hand and the left hand. Jesus said to them, you will indeed drink of this. But when he was referring to them, he actually says, what do you want? And he talks about the fact of referring and answering and directing his response to all of them. So I imagine that what was happening here is positions were being sought. And when the 10 saw this dialogue going on, they got very indignant. They got very either envious, jealous, upset. It brought out a strong emotion. Jesus doesn't really say that their emotional response was wrong. What he talks about is the overall philosophy about advancement. And this is where it comes in line with jealousy and envious. Envy and jealousy, in a lot of ways, are in our lives because we're dissatisfied with the status quo. We think we deserve something more. We think we deserve something better. We see what everybody else there says. And Jesus, in a way, is answering this whole philosophical question about worrying about everybody else and jealous or whatever and being first, position, money, or whatever. And here's what he says, and this is a great, great lesson to learn. Instead of thinking you're entitled, instead of thinking that you should have, instead of being in comparison with everybody else, instead of being envious about what somebody else has, instead of being jealous, just focus on God. And focus on serving. And focus on doing good. And in time, God will decide who gets elevated and who moves forward and who's in what place or whatever. Simply live in the opposite of enviousness is humbly serve. And don't worry about where it takes you. See, envy is an internal emotion that is very powerful. You can want what other folks want. You can almost feel like it's a need. It will suffocate you, and it will destroy your life. And what Jesus' recommendation was, when somebody was asking for position, they were envious of position, or when the 10 were upset and jealous of the request that was being made, he says to all of them, you need to stop worrying about all of that and about what each other are doing and simply be a servant. And those that will be first have to start out being last. Those that will be a master first have to be a slave and a servant. And it's a great lesson on how to overcome envy. Let me give you some things about overcoming envy. And these are some practical things that I just want to share with you, some thoughts as we close out this lesson today. And the first one is shift your focus to the goodness in your life. Is when I see people that are really envious and jealous sometimes, and I look at what they have compared to what other folks in the world have, I'm thinking to myself, we're pretty blessed in this country. And we need to shift our focus over to the things that God has done for us. When I think of health, I think about my age. I think about those that are a few years older going through serious illness that we mentioned this morning about Sarah's mother. And I think to myself, I'm thankful for the health I have. When I think about possessions, when I think about those things there, to me, is I see other folks that have more things or whatever, but I have the goodness in my life. I have God, I have wife, I have family, I have children, grandchildren, a great dog, two great cats, and great friends. And here's the thing. When you do pass and you're in the funeral home, things ain't coming to your funeral home. People will. And I have conducted a lot of funerals. I've conducted funerals where I was there with only two people because no one knew this person. And I've been there where the line's out the door and took 5 hours to get everybody through for a wake. And to me, relationships is important. Focus and shift your focus on the goodness in life. Second of all, remind yourself that nobody has it all. Nobody has it all. So I was with my brother, and I mentioned this, I think, maybe last week. I don't know if I did or not. I didn't speak last week, maybe 3 weeks ago. My brother and his wife traveled through Connecticut from D.C., where he pastors, up to Vermont on vacation. And they stopped. We had a breakfast at Cracker Barrel. And we talk, but we don't talk in depth a lot. We're guys. And so we don't have this, you know, really emotional conversation. We don't spend an hour on the phone. Usually it's a text, how you doing and stuff. I love my brother, but that's we've never lived close to each other in all our adult life. But he was there, and we're talking about church and stuff. He goes, how's the church doing? You know, and they've had a vested interest because they were our birthing church. They were our sending church to start us up. And I talk about things are going good. We've had ups and downs. I mean, we've gone up in attendance and down in attendance. I said, you know, of course, I know this, and all these years of pastoring, 35 years of pastoring, churches are all transitional, and they're always going to go up and down. The Lord didn't tell us to be successful, told us to be faithful, and just keep being faithful in what we're doing. And then he shares a story about last year in his church. They announced they're building a new building, and the new building is going to cost $22 million. And they're paying cash for it because they were blessed that their property got sold for $35 million. So they're building a brand new complex. But people didn't like the way the church, the design was going to be because it looked more, they were building a building that was more functional for community and everything else too because they'd like to do things for community and stuff. And a number of people kind of protested, whatever. In a matter of a week or two, he had 250 to 350 people just leave the church. And I got to be honest, I was kind of happy. Because it's good to hear that we're not, churches all go through the same struggle. It's all relative of what your issues are and stuff. And it made me think that whether it's a church that runs 100, or whether it's a church that runs 2,000, is nobody has it all. Nobody has that perfect ministry. Nobody has a headache-free ministry. It was kind of nice. And it's nice to know, too, is that I've seen people that I thought were very successful and had it all that actually sometimes is all borrowing money. I talked to somebody last year or so that had all kinds of nice things, and we were sitting down with them, and they wanted financial advice from me and my wife, and I thought to myself, well, you got everything. Come to find out, everything's borrowed. And I said, I was trying to teach them biblical principles, because my wife and I don't carry any debt. We have no credit card debt. We have our mortgage, and we have leases on vehicle. Our luxuries are leases on vehicle, and when I retire, I'm going to buy an old pickup truck, take my dog out, and snort at people, because to me, it's you live within your means. But I come to find out that, yeah, they may have it all, or seem like they have it all, but they're paying for it. Be careful with envy, because you don't know anybody else's situation. Remind yourselves that nobody has it all, and some folks are paying for it anyways. The next one, avoid people who are envious. You become who you hang with. If you are hanging with people that seem to think everybody else has it, you're going to take on that trait. We do become who we hang with. Those of you that are raising children, and I raise mine and our grandkids, we know that our kids and grandkids become who they hang with, and sometimes we're the ones that other parents are worried about. But if you as an adult are hanging around people in fellowship with people that seem to be jealous all the time, be very cautious of that. That brings to the next point, spend time with grateful people. People that are just appreciative of what they have. And it's interesting that when you finally go through a crisis of health and stuff, you find out very quick where your priorities are. You really find out where your priorities are and how grateful people truly are for what they have is when they realize it's not about the stuff, it's about the relationships and stuff. And then a couple more here. Know that advertisers target envy, and I'm throwing this out to you, especially if you're a parent, is advertisers, and I've been involved in marketing a little bit over the years and stuff, advertisers do focus groups. And the focus groups many times are, we want to know what made you feel jealous, envious, or wanting something because of somebody else or whatever. And there's a lot of targeting that goes on in advertising simply to hit that emotions of, you don't have what someone else has. Keep that in mind. That's why it's important for your children. I'm just giving some advice here. Commercials start coming on. You ever notice commercials get louder than the actual show? And there's a method to all that. And what happens many times is to set in your kids' ideology that this will make me successful, and somebody else has this, and I got to have it. And then last of all, celebrate the successes of others. One of the best ways to get over jealousy is, in a great way, is to really appreciate when someone else is successful. And to acknowledge their success, and to pray that they're more successful than you. We mentioned a week or so ago, or last week, that Tony and I have worked together for 20 years as of last June. And That is a rarity in ministry, to have a pastor and assistant pastor work together for 20 years. And Tony does a lot of detail work here. In fact, a lot of you go to Tony before you're ever going to come to me. I also know that there's going to come a time when I need to be smart enough to transition, because I want to make sure the church is successful. And you know, Tony has served faithfully for years in that. But here's the thing. Is I remember when Tony and I first got together, and Tony is pretty aggressive. Tony is a worker bee. Tony is a detail person. And I can remember there were some schisms when we first got together that I thought people were going basically around me. It was kind of like that King Saul, King David thing. And Tony was getting all the connections, and everybody was going to Tony and stuff. And I remember thinking early on is that, yeah, basically is, you know, he's trying to take over. He's trying to be more successful. He's trying to win folks over. And I, you know, in ministry, you've had people betray you in ministries and stuff. Pastors have it all the time. And I remember going through that in my mind. And I was envious of the fact that he was getting more acknowledgments and he was getting more credit for what was going on. And we actually had a sit-down conversation about some of this. This is years ago. And I finally got to the point to where I had to recognize him as not a hireling for me, but as God's man in the church with me. Get it? And I had to recognize the fact that although I hired him originally in the other church I pastored and brought him over here, I had to realize that if God called me to pastor Cornerstone Church, then God called him just as much. And it's very offensive to God for me to not want him to be as successful or more successful than I am. It's just wrong. And because I envied the fact that Tony had all this, and Tony is very well organized. And if people don't know, we found one thing. We complement each other very, very well. Because I'm not a detailed person. I have an iPad, an iPhone. I haven't touched a laptop in 10 years. In fact, I'm looking for the new laptop because you all gave me some money. And I said, somebody's got to teach me what Word is. I have no idea. I haven't touched a computer in ages. Fortunately, I've had good folks here and folks at my other position. But here's the thing is I found out that what I was jealous of was the fact that God had given me somebody in my life to minister with me who could do the things I can't do and don't like to do. And what's funny about this is that Tony also has taken the role where he understands he can do a lot of the work, and the here comes to me goes, everything is set, Pastor. We just need you to come in and say a few words. But what happens here is the way the envy and the strife, and the reason why we were able to come together for over 20 years is because we both learned to celebrate each other's successes. And many of you call upon Tony, and sometimes you say, I don't want to bother Pastor. You're never a bother to me, by the way. Tony is a phone talker. How many have noticed that? I am not a phone talker. I even answer Tony with a text after he leaves a message. But I have found this, though, is that the way I got over envy is I started to celebrate his successes. And I will say this, and I'm not retiring. My wife always talks, because stop talking like this, but in the next 5 years, I'd like to have less. I'd like to be a Walmart greeter. Welcome to Walmart. No responsibility. I will always be a part of Cornerstone. But I believe that the greatest days, people talk about buying buildings and building things, the greatest days will probably, in some ways, when I talk about physically, will not be under my pastorship. And that's okay. Because if those who follow succeed, people become known to Christ or know Christ, churches grow more effective for the community. And it comes back to that purpose-driven life book from Rick Warren, is that it's not about us, it's about him, about Christ. How to overcome envy? Celebrate successes of others. And here's the thing. If you're in a job where you think somebody has gotten more attention, got a promotion above you, gets more acknowledgement, if you let it eat at you, it will rot your bones, as the first passage in Proverbs we said. You won't see it now, but eventually it will come out like rust on a car. So begin to celebrate the other successes. In fact, share it with them that you're happy for the successes. God will honor that. And one day, remember we read that verse? Is that because you were a proper servant with the right attitude to acknowledge, God will make you master of all. See, to me, before you can lead, you got to follow. Before you can succeed, sometimes you have to fail. And before you can advance, sometimes you have to step back and let God work it all the way through. Here's the walk away as we close out this message here. So, envy is the art of counting other people's or others' blessings instead of your own. It's a lot of truth there. Envy is about counting others' blessings instead of your own. And other folks may be more blessed. Other folks may have succeeded more. I remember, and I'll close with this story, is my father said the most difficult thing about growing older, and we're going to celebrate his birthday on Labor Day. I'll be speaking at my brother's church in Fairfax, Virginia on Labor Day weekend. My dad will speak at the 9 o'clock service, I'll speak at the 10:30 service, and then we'll have my dad's birthday party. But he told me, he says, the older you get, the test of keeping yourself feeling good about yourself or getting envious or jealous is when you get people seeing your age or younger you succeed more than you. And my father said, the hardest time will come is when the president of the United States gets elected and he's younger than you are. Because everybody going, okay, it's one thing for the president to always be older. And when Barack Obama got elected, of course, he's a lot younger than I am. I thought to myself, there it is. But I watched Major League Baseball players and football players make the money, and these are young people, my grandkids. I'm like, there it is. And if you get envious and jealous and imperative, you're going to eat yourself up inside. That's an emotion you have to fight off. Don't be green with envy. Bow your heads for just a moment. Praise team is going to come up. Tom and Amy are going to come up and share some announcements. I just, when I decided to do these lessons on emotions, it's simply because I think it's just good. I mean, you come to church and you're dealing with things and, people, your work situation, a lot of jealousy can happen in your work situation, envious of somebody else's what they got. We need to keep our right mind and perspective and focus. And seriously is remind ourselves that let God take care of it. Let God take care of positions and wealth and all those things there. And if somebody else got something new that you can't afford, praise God that they got it. If somebody else seems to get advanced at the job and you're jealous of that, then maybe that's the reason why God is holding you back, because he wants to make sure that if you're going to climb that ladder, that you look back to the people that are behind you and you treat them well. Because they're going to be jealous of you. And if you're serving with somebody and working along somebody and they're getting more praise than you and you're getting envious and jealous of that, don't do that. God calls you to do your job. God called them to do their job, and just be appreciative of what each and every one is doing. And that's the way the church will succeed, the family will succeed, your job will succeed, as you go into it with the right heart. God will honor when we celebrate others.